Jessica Robles and Biscuit, the cat. And Jessica's going to talk about grounding relationality and discursive modes into subjectivity as proto-morality.
So many big fancy words right there. And while I'm waiting for this task bar down here to load so I can actually display the PowerPoint presentation that I've so lovingly crafted for you, I figured I'd start off just saying where this project comes from. So I'm interested in how people display relationships with one another and enact themselves as family members. And so part of how I ended up coming to intersubjectivity is that in much literature, for example, philosophical literature, sociological literature, intersubjectivity is a sort of orientation to another or attention to another. Now, Garfinkel, of course, has studied this and said that it's part of the mutual intelligibility that people build with one another, and then Shagloff took it a step further to say that, in fact, it can be built into the structure of how we sequentially respond to people so as to display understanding. And so repair becomes a way, for instance, in the paper that he wrote in 1992, to sort of fix an understanding that seems to have gotten lost along the way. I'm going to see if I can just make this happen without having to wait. There we go. It's not too bad. All right. Thank you for coming. There might be a slight delay just because of the slowness of the computer loading, so I apologize for that. There we go. So as I was saying, I talked a little bit about intersubjectivity already, but this proto-morality thing, so Bergman and Linnell in 1998 discussed this idea that there are different ways of looking at the concept of morality from an interaction perspective. And so one way of looking at morality is by seeing it as the sort of label we use for the basic commitments that we have in talk to each other. So there's a sense into which if, for instance, I give a question, you are committed to give an answer. You are morally, in a sense, obligated to give an answer. And that if people violate this expectation, the consequences can be swift and sometimes quite harsh. Hence Garfinkel's sort of breaching experiments and where those led. So intersubjectivity, again, is sort of a proto-morality practice in a way, the displays of understanding through various media in order to show people that you are following what they're saying and that you are involved in the interaction and upholding your end of the bargain. And then I also take an analysis that is influenced by CA as well as ethnomethodology and some of this more multimodal stuff by Goodwin as well as our good Dr. Heath was talking about earlier. All right, so the subject of the analysis is family interaction in the home. So these are many, many hours of a family's home movies, which happen to be movies donated by my own family, so you might catch a glimpse of me in a moment as a youngster. So there are three cases that I'm gonna present here. They're all from one recording, so as to easily not have to worry about going back and forth through a lot of different things, although I'm gonna focus just on one example, really. And the reason for that, it's going to be the first example. The reason that for that is that I'm focusing on that first example on the visual element, and I think for people who might get a little bit nervous about not having a transcript, that might be easier for you, so you're not losing too much of the verbal element there. And the other ones I'll just sort of talk through as different cases. So the first case you have is the Christmas gift distribution, and then this is in the early 1990s at grandparents' house. The second, Thanksgiving cleanup, so after a big dinner, people are cleaning up and sort of in the kitchen storing leftovers and whatnot, also in the 1990s, same grandparents' house, and then a birthday present at a big mass birthday party at an aunt and uncle's house, so same family with many extended family members who are all in the same place. You've got grandchildren, grandparents, parents, brothers, sisters, uncles, etc. Everybody's sort of hanging out. All right, so what are some of the ways that people do relating with one another? I've taken an interactional view in that what are the things people do in their interaction to show that they are trying to attend to one another. This example is basically about how people delay the completion of an interactional sequence in order to pursue the interaction beyond what would seem to be a stopping point. And so in this situation, and this is the one that I'm going to sort of show you a little bit of data from, the young girl, Samantha, who's standing with that big tin there, and her grandfather are going to interact over the giving of this gift. And so she's the granddaughter, he's the grandfather. And basically she finds this tin on the floor, so she and her sister are distributing presents at Christmas time. She finds this tin on the floor, and then she opens up the sequence of trying to figure out, is the tin for him or not? So it should be displayed on top of the tin, a name, which is usually how the presents are given out. But for some reason, there's some sort of uncertainty as to whose gift this actually is. Okay. So now I'm back to my taskbar problem. Having a moment. It's nicer to see data than to not see data. Well, perhaps not. It seems to be that part of the computer is frozen, but very odd. Anyway, I will talk through it, and then if for some reason it comes up, perhaps we'll get a chance to go through it again. This is, of course, one of those things that has never happened before. So let me get back to where I was. So, Christmas distribution, what happens here? So Samantha finds this tin on the floor, and her job is to figure out who it belongs to and give it to that person. She stands up and sort of indicates to the grandfather that it's in some way seems to be for him. So these are only a couple of shots. Of course, the interaction is much more extended than this and includes many different sort of poses. But she holds the tin out to him in such a way as to indicate that she's questioning, in a sense. So he sees that as a sign that he should look at the label on top of the tin and start to explore with her who it belongs to. They both look at this for several seconds, actually, without anybody seeming to come to any sort of agreement. Then he does this motion, so you see in the next picture over, he's starting to pull his glasses out. So he's got a pair of glasses on, but they're not his reading glasses. So he's going to switch glasses. So there's this whole sort of sequence where he's taking the glasses out, putting another pair of glasses in the pocket. And continue, they go on. And you hear him say a little bit something now where he says, oh, I'll be darned, or gosh darn, or something like that, to indicate, oh, yes, that is for me, or that's what it seems to be saying. And she does this little signal. So she makes a little pointing signal with her hand. She starts to turn away. And this is roughly where we come to this sequence. So just before this sequence, grandfather now re-angles the tin towards her again and catches her attention and starts saying, oh, well, this has other names on it besides mine. So he says, you know, you and your sister. And so he's got her attention now. Wait, it's not just for you. It's for me and my sister as well. And so she actually whips back fast enough that the hair flies a little bit. And then when she fully turns, he says, oh, and also Benny. Now, Benny is the name of the dog. And then right after he says, oh, yes, Benny's also on here too, and he looks up and says, so you know there's some dog bones in there. And you see that she's sort of smiling a little bit. I mean, it's a small picture, but she's sort of like, ah, and he smiles as well. So long after the business of perhaps being finished giving the gift has finished, he's going to continue pursuing her attention in the interim. So the tin is employed as this object for pursuing her attention. So not just through his voice, by, say, addressing her in person or looking at her, he sort of uses the tin to angle towards her. And in the beginning, when she has the tin, she does the same thing to him. She uses the tin as this sort of method of saying, can you check the label for me, look at it. These interactional sequences achieved for this purpose of making a joke, or at least that's part of why it's playing out. I would say that there's also an extent to which it's almost doing interaction for the sake of interaction. And I think this is a special kind of thing that happens with people that are displaying close relationships with one another, is that the job that was needing to be done in this interaction was to give the tin to Grandpa, who supposedly it was belonging to. But instead, it plays out on and on. And when she tries to leave, he brings her back and continues his joke. the granddaughter sort of, when he's referencing that it's for her sister, she doesn't seem to see it as a joke. But as soon as he says Benji, she starts to smile a little bit, and or Benny. And then as soon as he says, so you know there's some dog bones in there, then she's sort of like, okay, I see where Grandpa was going with this thing. He's teasing me. All right, then there's another kind of way that you can do interacting, and this is around maintaining an interactional sequence that is doing some sort of very mundane task with people and as a way of displaying familiarity. So in this interaction, you have Lisa here and Mike are mother and son, and they're cleaning up after the Thanksgiving dinner. And they've been doing this for a significant amount of time at this point. So they're putting dishes away, and they're bagging up food, and they're putting food on this, and doing this and this. And the whole time, there's very little direct interaction with each other. It's this sort of ballet of moving about each other and sort of engaged in a task, orienting with one another, but not to one another. And it feels very sort of effortless, and it's all going along. This is sort of one way that you show familiarity with people, is being able to really coordinate your actions in this way. However, a problem arises, and so there's this moment when this interaction gets disrupted. And what happens is that Mike is putting some food in a bag, and now he's worried that the food's going to spill out of the bag. So he displays it to her. He says, I'm not sure about this bag, and he displays it to her, indicating that he's not sure the food will stay in the bag because the bag doesn't seal. It's one of these flip-over-the-top bags. And she gets angry at him and says, well, I told you not to use that one, or something like that. And he sort of grumbles about the fact that she's just criticized his choice in bag and says, well, I didn't want to have to, you know, use one of the nicer bags or something. But despite the fact that he complains about that and sort of gives an account for why he didn't use one of those bags in the first place, his immediate next move, which we see in this shot over here, is to go to the drawer where the bags that are sealable are. So another situation here where we can see a little bit of a relational roles being taken on is that even though they're both adults, he takes her criticism, and even though he's going to give an account for it, he's still going to do what she's asking him to do, basically, which is, you know, put it in the right bag, like I would have indicated for you to do. However, right after that, so after she sort of criticized him, and she does so in quite a sharp tone, and he goes right over to the drawer there, he starts taking out a bag, and you hear him immediately transition to, so I have this head cold, and she says, yeah, I can hear that. So they've gone right back to the interaction that was in progress before. They go back very quickly. There's very little sort of trouble around this transition. It just sort of continues. And then they go on for several more minutes sort of fixing up the kitchen. So you get mundane topics, parallel interaction, this way of showing very familiar, sort of comfortable interactions with another. Sort of a hierarchy achieved through this compliance with the criticism, the fact that it is complied with in this particular way, and perhaps as a way of doing deference, so maybe we don't know that it's a mother-son relationship right off the bat just based on that, but there certainly seems to be an acceptance of somebody as having the ability to criticize another and to get somebody to do something, to give a directive in that way, the acceptance of that as being something that she can do. All right, the last example. This takes place at a mass birthday party, so it just so happens that, you know, almost half the family members in this family were born within a 2-month span in the summer, so they decided to have this mass birthday party. So they're all sitting in a circle, and this is you can see that the quality of the taping even is different, so there's a much more zooming in on one person, because people are opening gifts one at a time, and so the person who's the present gift opener is going to be the attention of the recording. So here it is Jilly, and Jilly is just starting to open this gift, and when she opens this gift, she discovers that it is lingerie. Now, immediately, something interesting happens with the interaction where everybody starts making jokes about the fact that she just got lingerie, and that it's this very public sort of on camera, you got lingerie. And so this example demonstrates a way in which interaction is used for bringing in different people as participants and bringing in people's relationships as relevant to the interaction. So right after she pulls out this lingerie, her father-in-law, so her husband's father, makes the comment, oh, Mike's going to like that too. So, so this sort of references the fact that we expect somehow people who are in a romantic relationship to enjoy each other's sort of sexually explicit presence. I mean, it's not super scandalous, but it's at least frilly and small enough to be a little bit scandalous. And so he makes that comment, and of course everybody laughs, and this is where this top moment comes, and she says, oh, I guess it is your birthday too, which is a little bit funny, because actually it literally is his birthday too, but that's something you would hear people say anyway, even if it wasn't the case. And then they go on to joke a little bit about what's going to happen if she, for example, is wearing this lingerie out on the balcony of their new home. So now you've also got a reference to common knowledge, so things people in the interaction know, that they live in a house that has a balcony and that the balcony is visible from the street. And so she makes this joke, Jillie makes this joke, and now she looks to her mother, who's sitting on her left there, and she says, oh yeah, when, you know, after Mike's left, so her husband, after Mike's left, so she referenced him, I'm gonna be out on the balcony drinking my coffee. So she has her hand in this sort of fake coffee cup shape. And then she points at her husband, Mike, and says, well, you're gone. And then you see her sort of laughing. And again, on the far left, your right there, you see her looking at her mother. So her eyes go left to her mother. And so as the interaction plays out in this way, she's sort of paying attention in different ways to different people in the room, sometimes saying explicitly you, sometimes pointing even, but always bringing in different kinds of people. So her mother doesn't participate a lot in this conversation. I think she makes one laughter sort of comment, or says something like, haha, right, at another point. But she continuously looks at her every time she makes a comment. And it's interesting the ways in which she's sort of making her participation part of it, even though she's not contributing as much as everybody else, who's sort of teasing back and forth in this way. So some ways in which people make relationships relevant. So on the face, non-relevant persons can be treated as relevant in certain situations. So for instance, in the last example, the father-in-law of Jillie makes relevant her relationship with Mike. And that sort of determines the rest of the interactional sequence. What gets teased about is her interaction with Mike and what she's gonna do when he leaves the house and her lingerie, et cetera. Again, slightly scandalous. You have gaze pointing, person referencing, and objects being employed in this interaction to do certain things with certain people, to pursue their interaction, to show that they're relevant, etc. And the persons and relationships are made relevant as this sort of shared knowledge. People are not explaining who people are to each other, and that indicates the familiarity with one another's relationships and roles. Now, studying families, so there are some questions that arise out of this. One is the use of home movies as data. So naturally, CA people are always quite into the most naturally occurring talk that can possibly be captured. And home movies would seem on the face of them to not be this kind of talk. And you see, in fact, that people do perform for the camera. However, the instances that I've shown you are different in that regard. So the last instance where people are opening the birthday presents, there is a lot of performance for the camera. It's always on one person at a time. The person who's filming is very prominent in the room. They're addressed as the person who is filming. So she looks at the camera several times, and the person who's filming makes comments. And so that is a very different interaction than the one you saw at the beginning, where the camera was very much recessed from the interaction, and the granddaughter and grandfather weren't seeming to even be aware that they were being filmed at the time. Or if they were, it didn't seem to be a concern in the same way. So just noting that that is important to the way people are doing actions and talk is something to keep in mind. And then doing relating is this consequential form of commitment. So the fact that you're in a relationship is being both displayed and is sort of making the sense of your displays simultaneously. And that to some extent there's something we can call morality about this, that people are indebted to give certain kinds of responses or give certain kinds of attention to others in a way that is different for closer relationships than perhaps for others. Thank you. Questions? Yes, Malcolm.
Yeah, I was very struck. I thought it was very interesting stuff. especially your use of those old home movies.
Yeah.
But all of the sequences that you chose to show us seem to me to involve interaction with, as well as around and in relation to, a set of material objects. So they're all relating with these things. This was the focus of participants' attention in some way, in fact, in all kind of ways,
right.
In all three sequences. And yet you de-emphasised that entirely. You made it only about the relationships between particular kind of objects called people, and there was no analysis whatsoever of the kind of relationships with objects, and how that happens, and how, what you can say about that. And I wondered if you would agree with my critique.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think that the objects are important to the interaction. So I think, and I'm not sure if this is possibly part of what you were criticizing. So when I talked about how the tin of popcorn, possibly, it's at one point named prior that it's a tin of popcorn, but nobody's really sure. It could have dog bones, because that's what Grandpa said. So it's being used to pursue her interaction in a way. So it has a use in the interaction, though there might be something more you're looking for in that sense. Certainly, in the lingerie example, the lingerie is really the focal point for doing all these actions of teasing and imagining what Julie might be doing when Mike's not home. And so they seem to be, perhaps not unimportant, perhaps not just as important. I'm not sure where they would sit on the important scale, but they're definitely, absolutely implicated in the interaction. The only one I'm not as sure about is the middle one. So there is the issue of the bags, and it seems so fleeting at the time that perhaps I just didn't notice it. And yet it is the topic, in a sense, and it's being used to do some sort of criticism.
But you did comment on the early part, of course we didn't see them, but,
right.
But I loved your narrative as well. Shows we don't have to see the point. But your comment was they were sort of moving around these objects in this sort of practice balletic way.
Right, right.
And I thought that was gorgeous. But maybe that's it. Maybe it's the practice of that and the kind of sort of skillfulness of that that makes it very difficult to analyze.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Thank you. Yes.
I think I can Martin's face, and that is about the notion of an object, the giving of an object and the relationship. And I suppose I was assuming the first fragment and the final fragment was really about the way the object itself in some way not only appeals to a relationship, but the response to that object provokes, is orientated towards that relationship. Is that one of the things that you're interested in doing?
Yes.
Or looking at?
Yes, definitely.
So are you looking at the exchange of gifts, for example, Christmas, or what if it might be the unwrapping of gifts?
In a larger project, yeah.
The response to the object, in some ways expected to embody or portray the relationship, the standpoint towards you and the other. Right?
Mm-hmm. That is actually part of the larger project that I'm doing with this data in particular, is looking at giving and receiving of different gifts and the rules around that, in a sense.
Well, we're just moving seamlessly into tea. I'll just ask a quick question.
Yeah.
How do you see your, because you flagged up into subjectivity and Shegloff's work on third position repairs, I think it was.
Yeah.
So how do you see your work, as it was difficult for us to tell without actually seeing the data, but as in relation to that very turn by turn kind of approach where you've got a sense that the other person hasn't understood you, so you're correcting yourself to produce intersubjective alignment, I guess, or understanding. So in terms of your view of intersubjectivity, do you think is that a similar project, or?
I really took Shegloff as a starting point, so
yeah.
So to back up, the bridging work between Shegloff and what I present here is that I basically started with Shegloff's assumption that intersubjectivity is about displaying intelligibility or that you're following people's utterances in some way, or that you're not following. So
yeah.
That, you know, he focuses on the not following, but I treated it as either following or not following.
Mm.
And I focused on things like gaze and speaker address, and so I didn't just talk about repair, but mostly about very instant sort of turn by turn, sort of, you know, who looks at who now, and then when do they look at this person, and how people's facial expressions portray that they're following. So when people make a face that they're not, you know, when people make a face, they get it, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then this was sort of a bigger step in the taking.
Yeah.